Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Tomorrow, by the way, we'll have a pair of New York City commissioners to talk about the plan to make parts of Central Park and Prospect Park permanently car-free. We'll talk to the Transportation Commissioner, Polly Trottenberg, and the Parks Commissioner, Michael Silver, together on car-free Prospect Park and Central Park more than before on tomorrow's Brian Lehrer Show. But right now, an uptown gentrification story representative of what's going on in so much of the city. The recent eviction of seven Latino-owned businesses on one block along Broadway in Washington Heights. It's an extreme case of what happens when new investors purchase properties in a gentrifying neighborhood. It's emblematic of the state of the hot real estate market in Manhattan, as in much of the city. Property investors have flooded uptown neighborhoods recently, creating a slippery slope for longtime residents and businesses. Here to discuss this first is New York City Councilman for Upper Manhattan, Idonis Rodriguez, and we'll get some other voices on after him. Councilman Rodriguez, welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, thank you, Brian, for having me on your show.
And I apologize for running late with our last segments. I know you have another just a couple of minutes for us before you have to get back into a city council session. So what's happening in the Heights? Is Northern Manhattan real estate at its historical peak?
Well, you know, I think that there's a clear indication that when people with a big amount of dollars go and buy a property in our community, with intention to turn it over and push our small business out, as also our tenants who've been living in rent regulation, this is something that we need to do. This is something that we should call for our attention. And I've been working the last couple of years since I've been elected to the council in some bills that is trying to come out with a solution on how landlords who buy a property, they should work closely and support more our small business. I believe in a society where everyone should be able to do fine. People who invest the money, they should be able to get their return. However, it is important to continue supporting our small business. And our small business should not pay the price for the big corporation to get a large return. And I think that's what we've been seeing in many places in the city. And I'm committed as a boy, as a council member from Northern Manhattan, to do whatever it is in my ability to stop the level of gentrification that happened in other area, and I hope that it will not happen in Northern Manhattan.
There was a story, I guess, in the Real Deal magazine about one particular block in Washington Heights. Are you familiar with it?
I am familiar. Unfortunately, the commercial rent. A commercial rent law are dictated by the state, and we know what happened in the last Senate election, where the real estate invested billions of dollars to be sure that they could defeat the effort to provide majority to the Democrats.
And let me jump in. We're gonna correction. First of all, that story was in the Village Voice, and we're gonna talk to Solange Uimana from the Voice in just a minute. But what block of Washington Heights, Councilman? Just so people know what we're talking about?
Well, what is it?
Actually, Solange, you want to identify the block?
Yeah, 161st and Broadway is one of those blocks where there's a new landlord who bought a piece of land. It's like for a area, four buildings that he bought it together. And I believe, you know, that, again, that's a particular block. It's five blocks away from the hospital. I know it's a great opportunity for someone to come out with new businesses.
Right.
They're expecting that they will have a good and large traffic.
Just five blocks from the big New York Presbyterian Hospital there on 168th and Broadway.
Well, yeah, yes, 165, because we have a children's hospital at 165 and Broadway.
Right,
so
it starts
no
that
doubt
far
that
down.
There's a large traffic in that area, foot traffic in that area. But I just hope that, you know, that those individual corporations that have a large package of money, for they to understand that they should be able to plan, do well, get a good return, at the same time also, that they support our small business to a state in our community.
So is there a policy response before you go that you think is required to this kind of turnover?
Well, there's a bill that we have at the council. It's called the Survival Bill. It's a bill that it didn't get the support of the previous speaker that we have at that time. We reintroduced the bill, Councilmember Palma and myself, as a prime sponsor, and also all the council members, they had added names to sponsor this bill. But both Councilmember Palma and I, who also were prime co-sponsor in the last section, we believe that it is important to get our small business survival bill. And the intention of that bill is that to create a new law where when a landlord in the small business, they cannot agree with the price or they renew the lease, that there should be arbitration, that both of them should uh-huh. go make the case, mediate, and come out with something that benefits both.
Arbitration before an existing small business mm-hmm. gets evicted because of rent increases in a surging real estate market. City Councilman Adonis Rodriguez from Washington Heights and Inwood, thank you for coming on with us.
Thank you, Ryan.
And joining us now are Solange Uwimana, editorial fellow at the Village Voice, who wrote the story about the eviction of the seven businesses at Broadway and 163rd Street, and also New York City Councilman Mark Levine of Morningside Heights and Hamilton Heights, the district just below Councilman Rodriguez, also affected by this kind of change. Hi, Councilman.
Hey, Brian. Great to be here. Actually, the stores in question are in the northern end of my district. I live just two blocks away.
Okay. And Solange, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us about your story on that block.
So it was, I guess, unexpected when I got the story, and I just wanted to investigate further. So what I found was that on that block between, I think it's 162nd and 163rd on Broadway, which is in Washington Heights, is that there was a string of about seven businesses who were given eviction notices about 4 years after the new owners took over the building. And so when those leases expired, the new owners didn't renew them. So they were sort of left in limbo with these month-to-month leases. And so that was the biggest thing that came out of this story, is that, you know, when you have these immigrant-owned businesses in large parts in the city that don't really know what to do and they don't know who to turn to, they're just disappearing.
So, Councilman, they turned to you?
They did, and we were able to connect him to some wonderful attorneys at Legal Aid Society's Community Development Project. You know, Brian, you and I have talked in the past about the fact that so many residential tenants go to housing court without an attorney. Well, the same is true for mom-and-pop businesses, and so they're signing leases which have unfavorable terms and don't give them a right to renew at the end of the term, and then when they are in a difficult dispute with the landlord, they have very little backup. We were able to get at least a smoother exit in this case for these tenants, but the bottom line is there's very little protection for commercial tenants in New York City and New York State law. As bad as the situation is for residential tenants, and you've focused a lot on this, including today, there's almost no protection to a commercial tenant who's facing a lease renewal. If a landlord wants that tenant out, they get 30 days notice. That's it. If the landlord wants to double or triple the rent, there's nothing the tenant can do. If the landlord wants the tenant to stay month to month with no lease, as happened for years on end, then again, the tenant has really no recourse. And what's interesting about the case on 162nd, rent was a factor, but I think an even bigger factor was these were very small stores, 400 square feet, 600 square feet, and to attract chains and higher paying tenants, landlords like to aggregate multiple small stores. And that's why you often see one store stay vacant, two stores stay vacant, three until a landlord can assemble a big plot. We could address this in the zoning code, which has been done already in the southern part of my district and the lower 100s on the west side, where new storefronts are going to be limited to 40 square feet width. New banks are going to be limited to 25 square feet. This is actually a disincentive for chains, but small businesses are great at thriving in those kind of smaller niche storefronts, and we'd like to see that continue to be the bread and butter of uptown retail.
And Solange, what's the role of institutional capital as opposed to other kinds of money?
So after the recession, a lot of the institutional players pulled out of some of these neighborhoods. And so since the institutional players are more beholden to big banks, I guess there wasn't a lot of money there to go around. So you have these smaller players who have individual investors who can also now move in and sort of snap up these buildings that are, you know, staying vacant and are fetching like very high prices now. So you have smaller places like Coal Town, which bought this building on Broadway, and just, you know, pulling out like millions and millions of dollars to purchase these buildings. And it's this new trend. So you have like all these smaller, investors just trying to get a foothold in some of these places, and especially Washington Heights, because it's an area that's growing now with the High Bridge that's open. It's going to really attract a lot of investment.
The new horizontal park across the Harlem River.
Right. So you have all these factors. And so when a block like this is, you know, is open and you have to use some of these practices to sort of get these businesses out, it's, I guess, a win-win for them. You know, I'd really wish that Coal Town had returned my calls, because I would have gotten their side of the story. So now I'm just left wondering, like, what is the incentive there? And you know, what are they going to do to sort of balance, you know, the historical value of some of these businesses with some of the new investments that they're trying to bring into the area?
So listeners, including... is Coal Town the name of the company?
Yeah, the Coal Town Properties is the owner of that building.
Okay. Folks at the head of Coal Town Properties, if you're listening, now's your chance to comment on Solange's story in the Village Voice. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Should you be seen as a bad actor in that neighborhood, call up and tell us why not. And any listeners from Morningside, Hamilton, and Washington Heights, has new ownership taken over your building, and how has it affected your residential or commercial property, or for that matter, from anywhere else in the city, as we tell the story of one block in Washington Heights as indicative of the kind of real estate change that's taking place in so much of New York, affecting commercial as well as residential renters. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. For City Councilman Mark Levine of Morningside Heights and Hamilton Heights, and Solange Uimana from The Village Voice. Give us a call. We'll continue in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Solange Uimana from The Village Voice and City Councilman Mark Levine of Morningside Heights and Hamilton Heights, as we talk about institutional money coming into some of these gentrifying neighborhoods, both residential and commercial blocks. Solange's article looks particularly at Broadway between 62nd and 163rd in Washington Heights as a case study. And Councilman Levine, I'm going to digress for 1 minute, because earlier in the show we mentioned a bill that got through City Council in the budget deal with the mayor that I think was your bill, to extend the season past the traditional Labor Day closing of beaches and pools in the city. That was your bill, right?
Yes, I'm very excited about this. It's going to be a big improvement at a time, as you mentioned, when September is hotter and hotter. Actually, last September, the hottest week of the year was after Labor Day, and actually schools weren't even open until Thursday that year, so we had this crazy situation of terrible heat, no school, but the beaches were closed. And what happens? Well, people show up at the beach, and that's unsafe. They have no lifeguard protection. So this is first and foremost a safety matter, but also, we think, great for the economies of the neighborhoods around the beach areas, and gives a place for regular New Yorkers who can't go to the Hamptons to come for the cost of a Metro card and enjoy some of the world's greatest beaches, and recognizing the reality that the first week of September is still very hot and getting hotter every year.
The Global Warming Adaptation and Recreation Bill, I just named it that, from Councilman Mark Levine. All right, let's get a landlord's perspective on the real estate story. Adam in Brooklyn calling in. Thanks, Adam. You're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. It's an interesting, and I'm generally...
Adam, could I get you off your speakerphone and onto your handset? That's just for sound quality.
That.
Thanks.
Is that better?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, thank you. That's better.
Okay, good. Yeah, generally speaking, I'm in favor of protections for tenants, and I agree that it's important to protect small businesses. And with rising retail costs, that can be a real challenge for small businesses to stay in spaces, and it's obviously appealing for landlords to charge as much as they can for a retail space. But the other side of that is that a tenant who is a mom-and-pop shop has less money, less of a guarantee. There's a far bigger chance that they are not going to survive as a business, and then, you know, they're going to stop paying their rent. They'll stay in the space. You'll have to evict them. That can take, you know, 4-6 months, a year. During that time, the space is vacant. And, you know, the larger landlords like Thor, Vornado, they're going to cover their bases no matter what. But if you're in a situation like I was at one point where I have a commercial space where a photography studio, and I rented the other half to another commercial tenant for office space, and he did a handful of illegal things, including opening a bodega, and then eventually just stopped paying his rent, stopped paying his utilities, and it took me 6 months to evict him, and I wasn't running much of a margin on that space. So that was very expensive for me. I had to make up the shortfall. And if you are one of those people who's trying to get into the housing market, you buy one of those three-story buildings with a commercial space on the ground floor. Maybe you live on the second floor and rent out one of the apartments.
Right.
Having one tenant out of three who all of a sudden stops paying his rent for months on end because the legal process to evict a tenant is so long, even for commercial, and it can be worse for residential, that creates a real problem. So, of course, the incentive is there to rent to the largest best credit tenant you
can
find.
So, Councilman Levine, talk to Adam. Can everybody's interest be taken care of here? The small landlord, like he describes himself to be, and the tenants, and you know, not and still take care of everybody's needs. Maybe not cave into the big institutional landlords, but still not lock out somebody like him from his potential profits while protecting the current resident stores.
Well, look, I understand that if Adam is renting a previously vacant space, that you could be worried about the risk of a small business. But we're talking about businesses which have been in place for decades. Punta Cana, the restaurant on 162nd and Broadway, been there for over 30 years. So they have a viable business model. There's no danger that they're going to suddenly fail. The economy is improving. Overwhelmingly, when small businesses close in Uptown Manhattan, it's for one reason, because their lease is up for renewal. And the landlord either doesn't want to rent to them or wants to rent to them at exorbitant rates, which, by the way, are $100 a foot commonly in Uptown Manhattan. And Punta Cana was already paying $100 a foot and has been asked to go to $180 a foot. This is $9,000 a month for a 600-square-foot space. But, look, I think the most enlightened landlords realize that, sure, you can make a couple extra bucks renting to a Duane Reade or a bank, but that the long-term value of the property is actually enhanced when you have really vibrant, diverse businesses, and that the long-term health of the neighborhood is enhanced when you have local entrepreneurs who hire locally, who reinvest in the neighborhood, and that's going to make your neighborhood a place where people want to live. It's going to increase the value of the property. We don't want to be just another suburban shopping mall.
Adam, thank you very much for chiming in on this. Please call us again. And it looks like we're getting a call from somebody who lives right on that corner, 162nd and Broadway. Johnny in Washington Heights, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to attest to what Solange found in her article. I live right on that block, and I actually I started working at a business called Sweet Life Pastry between 162 and 163 on that block because I went there every day and was such a staple in the neighborhood, and they can barely make their rent. So I started doing their website and baking for them and whatever they need, kind of in exchange for food because they can't even afford to pay me. But I'm kind of terrified when their lease is up in a year, what's going to happen based on this. But this is a community staple, and I'm so passionate about this place staying open because of the community that I've found there, and that it serves such a wide group of people. It's the kind of place that needs to be there. You know, not a Starbucks,
Solange,
not a Duane Reade.
And let me get a response because we're going to run out of time soon. Solange, you know that store?
I have passed it, yes. And the thing about that block is that all those businesses are community owned. I mean, those are the people that live in that neighborhood, and everybody that they employ also lives in that neighborhood. So I think what the landlords don't really understand is that, you know, when they come in, and as Councilman Levine said, the people they're going to employ don't live in that neighborhood. They don't have any ties to it. So they're coming from, you know, other parts of New York City. So they don't have that same sort of, you know, institutional or valuable basis to go with. So I think, you know, it's really true. Once these businesses disappear, like, the neighborhood just starts to change. And, you know, in the end, I think New York City will have to contend with, you know, do we keep these businesses, or, you know, do we start to modernize and attract more investors? And I think that's a real struggle going forward.
Do you see a balance of interest for the city at large, not just for the investors and sort of their rights in the free market, but also for the good of the neighborhood, for some change, some dynamism to be able to take place in the commercial, you know, businesses that are there?
Well, you can't stop innovation, right? You can't stop investment. So ultimately, I think you really have to balance the needs of the neighborhood and the community with those of the investors and sort of realize the balance there. I mean, if you go down to, I think, Hamilton Heights, you see, I mean, there is a Starbucks, but there are also still, like, community shops. There are still other places that you can still go to that sort of resonate with the neighborhood, but there are also other investments mixed in. So I think that's ultimately what's going to happen with Washington Heights as well.
Councilman Levine, we just have 30 seconds left. If I understand correctly, you haven't been able to get enough sponsors for this small business survival bill that Councilman Rodriguez was talking about before, that would mandate arbitration with small businesses before they could, you know, lose their leases or be evicted. Why in this progressive city council can't that get enough sponsors?
Well, we've got 19 already. I'm one of them. That number is growing all the time. It was had over 30 sponsors in the last session, going back a couple years when it was first introduced. I'm quite confident it'll get above 26, and we'll start to move. I think that there's increasing realization about the threat that small businesses are under. It's not affecting every neighborhood equally. It's particularly in Manhattan and downtown Brooklyn and places mm-hmm. where rents are rising. So it may not be on the radar screen of every member of
right.
the council.
And that has to be the last word. Councilman Mark Levine from Morningside Heights and Hamilton Heights.
And Lower Washington Heights, too.
And Salah Jurimana, editorial fellow for The Village Voice, who wrote that story about the eviction of seven businesses on Broadway and 162nd, 163rd Street. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having
Thank
me,
you, Brian.
Bye-bye.